Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Just Get Started podcast. I'm your host, Brian Andrako, and thanks again for being a part of this journey. On today's episode, I have a wonderful guest by the name of Alex Cotone, who is a copywriter, marketing strategist, and the founder of the Copy Posse, the raddest, baddest crew of copywriters on the internet with over 500,000 students worldwide. And she got her start in the marketing world in 2008 when she accepted an internship at Mindvalley and quickly became part of the executive team that grew the company 3x to over 8 figures in annual revenue. Alex left her position as creative director at Mindvalley in 2011 to start her own successful consulting and copywriting business. Since then, she has helped launch several successful brands and has proudly partnered with many of the hottest transformational authors and businesses on the planet, writing high-converting sales copy, scaling multi-million dollar brands, and crafting iconic promotional campaigns. In 2020, she founded the Copy Posse, an online academy dedicated to helping copywriters and entrepreneurs from around the world ignite their businesses with her fun and empathetic approach to branding, marketing, and copywriting. She has been featured on Forbes, Mindvalley, and Founder. She is a 5-time speaker at AdWorld and was crowned 2022 Marketer of the Year by Digital Marketer. We had quite the conversation and really went deep into her Just Get Started story and how she can help you get started on your own journey today. So I hope you all enjoy this wide-ranging conversation with Alex. And without further ado, please welcome in Alex Cotone. Alex, welcome to the podcast. Good to have you.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you.
I'm excited. I know we had some technical stuff, and you know, this is what's fun about podcasting is like there's all these different things that come into it, but at the end of the day, it's about conversation and meeting new folks. So I'm glad we're here. Glad to talk with you. So
yeah, me too. I'm glad I made it. I don't even know if Mercury's in retrograde or what, but we had some link issues with Wi-Fi, but we're here. Hey, we're here.
You know, but if you think about it, which is kind of random when we start, it's, you know, starting, there's nothing goes right as we think it's going to go, right? There's all these things that we have to navigate on our journey. So maybe that's a good transition to the conversation about just getting started, right? So
you're right. Totally.
So there's a couple big topics I wanted to talk about with you. I thought could be really valuable because your story is really interesting. And by the way, congrats on all the success. I mean, starting from the bottom, from nothing, and growing up to where it is today, that's pretty incredible. What, it's probably been, what, 12, 13 years, I guess, now, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you zoom all the way back to when I first got into marketing and got my first job at a marketing company, it was in 2008. So however many years ago that is.
That's 16.
Can you believe it? There we go, 16. But started my own business in 2011. So, you know, technically been like out on my own, you know, since then. So, yeah.
Well, I wanted to start talking about decisions because a lot of folks that listen to this podcast are maybe business professionals or in corporate America. They've thought about starting something. They haven't taken the leap yet. And, you know, there's hesitations and, you know, they have all these decisions they're making. I thought it would be fun though. I'm actually curious. Do you ever think back of what the Alex as a attorney would be? Do you ever go back to those days and like think, what if I took that left turn? Where would I be?
Yeah. You know, I think about that all the time because I have a twin brother. Mm. He's not a lawyer, but he's a doctor. And so I literally have the closest person in my life who for the vast majority of our lives until literally right after graduating from high school and then going to college, we were like on the exact same path, like doing the exact same thing. We both were in the running for valedictorian in high school. We were both like overachievers since the day we came into the world, and he was going to be a doctor and I was going to be a lawyer. And one of my favorite things now is he comes over, he literally lives just down the street, and he's always like, what did you figure out that I didn't? Like, you made a decision that literally was like the sliding doors moment. Mm-hmm. And he thinks, in his words, that I pull money out of the sky because he has to go to the hospital every day and work. And I think about that often. Like, what would I be as a lawyer? I mean, I would probably be very good at it and I would probably be miserable. I don't think I would have enjoyed it because I can't imagine doing anything other than what I'm doing now.
Well, because I think a lot of folks struggle with the identity, as you mentioned, valedictorian, in the running for valedictorian, right? You probably were in the books. You had great grades. You had everyone, parents, all the people around were like, oh, she's going to be an attorney. We're so jacked up. And then you're like, I'm going to do something different. How were you able, do you think back of like, how were you able to make that decision to pivot at that time in your life?
Yeah. And I think the first thing I want to say is, you know, there is this part of me that does feel very blessed because as much as my parents were very academic, I should say my mom, you know, my stepdad who he's an entrepreneur. I think he always knew I was probably destined for something different than law school, but they really gave me permission to kind of figure it out. And so even though I did, you know, I was putting pressure on myself and did feel that like family pressure to go into academics and continue down that path, they made it very clear that, you know, I was in control and could make the decisions I want. And there are days where I do feel really lucky that I decided to take that left turn at such a young age. Cause I'm going to be totally upfront and honest and say that, you know, I understand that the older you get, the harder it becomes to take those risks, because every year you put into building a career, it gets harder and harder to decide, am I going to give this all up for something else? And so I don't want to minimize the fear that anyone's feeling, because it's real and it's valid and it's scary as frick. I don't know if we can swear on here, but it's scary, you know?
Yeah, go ahead. Let it fly.
And yeah. And so I think the biggest thing was listening to the voice inside that told me, this isn't really what you want. And that was scary, because we build up all of these stories in our head about why it should be what we want, whatever it is that we're doing, or why it was a smart decision, you know, or why, you know, that taking that risk now would not be a good idea. And we tell ourselves a lot of stories and then we reinforce them, because we never want to be wrong. We never want to do something where we potentially would look back and go, see, I knew it, that was going to be a big mistake. And so I do think a lot of it is first just listening to your intuition. And it was like, I could see the path in front of me going into law school. And I knew myself well enough to know that like, once I was down that path, it would be really hard for me to turn back, because I have a hard time. I have a hard time quitting or giving up on anything. Yeah. And so I do feel very, very blessed that I made the decision at the age that I did and went down a new path with marketing and getting into this world. With that being said, I see people in my community all the time at all ages and all different backgrounds, all different educations, bet on themselves and make the decision to do something different. And to me, that's so inspiring, because that to me takes so much courage to say, hey, you know what? Yeah, I was a school teacher for years and years and years, and I love my kids so much and I never want to let them down. But at the end of the day, I hated what I did in terms of like having to wake up and be that role for myself when I knew I could do something different, and having to not only tell everyone in your life, hey, I'm not going to be a school teacher anymore, and have to, you know, potentially let your kids down in terms of, you know, your students, hey, I'm not going to do this anymore. And watching some of my students decide to make those tough decisions, to me, it's like, it's inspiring to see.
Yeah. Well, you do make a good point, because I think it comes down to that and using that intuition, but being okay with, if this doesn't work out, at least I, at this point in my life, whatever it is, whatever day someone makes that decision, I made it with all the information I have, and this is what I want to do. And I don't think you can have regret. Maybe you differ, you know, on that thought is, I don't think you can regret yourself, because looking back, you're like, hey, I made the decision with all the information I had. Whether it works out or not, we don't, I mean, who knows, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's the other misconception is, I agree. I mean, I don't have many regrets. I think there's things looking back that I'm like, huh, if I knew what I knew now, I would have definitely done things different. But I love that saying, like, you either win or you learn. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that the path to success is not a straight line. And so it's easy to look at other people and say, oh, they have it all figured out and they must have felt ready when they made the decision. And another thing I love to say is, ready is not a feeling. Or sorry, ready is, ready is not a feeling, it's a decision. So it doesn't, like, you don't want to wait until that day where you wake up and it feels like, yeah, now I'm ready.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge misconception a lot of people have, is because that feeling might not ever come. And then you're left like wondering, well, why never, like, why did I never feel ready? I guess I'll just stay on the path I'm on now, even though I'm unhappy or I'm not feeling fulfilled in my work or whatever that might be. And realizing that everybody is freaked out when they're making those decisions to bet on themselves, to do something different, to not play it safe. And knowing that, I think, makes it a little bit more easier to understand that it really is about deciding.
Yeah. That's probably been one of the more general themes over, gosh, in year seven doing this, like folks saying, I wasn't ready. Now, sometimes that decision gets made for you. They get laid off, they whatever, but they had to take action. At other times, it's just, I just got to do this now. Like, I can't wait any longer. So to your point, yeah, it's like, you're never going to wake up one day, you know, stretch out and be like, oh, okay, today's the day. I'm so excited. Like, most likely it's like, you're going to kind of get your butt kicked and you're just gonna have to do it, you know? So,
and you'll always find a reason not to. Like, we are biologically programmed to stay safe.
Yeah.
You know? And so we will always look for a reason to support our decision to stay the same and stay safe.
Mm, yeah, you're right.
And especially if you're not surrounding yourself with other people who are, I don't even want to say risk takers, but people who are conditioned to step outside their comfort zone, you will just become stuck in a sort of echo chamber of everyone going, yeah, stay safe, stay safe, stay safe. Don't take that risk. Don't bet on yourself. No, it's too risky. Don't do it. And it's just so easy to stay in that place. And so I think, you know, people who are listening to this, for example, it's like the perfect way to just start hearing other people's stories and going, oh, okay, I love the people in my life who want to keep me safe. They're not doing it out of malice or because they don't believe in me, but they're reinforcing their own narrative about why they're not taking risks so that they can stay safe. And it feels better when everyone stays in our little safety bubble together, you know? And so it really, I think, to, you know, comes down to deciding what's best for you and asking yourself, what are you tolerating? I mean, I know for me, it got to the point where ignoring the voice inside was more painful. Like the misalignment I was feeling was more painful than any risk-taking I could have embarked upon. You know, it became like the voice became so loud where I could not ignore it anymore.
Yeah. Well, let's noodle on that a little bit and kind of, I guess, sort of sidestep, but in a similar tone. So when you left Mindvalley, you kind of, did you have an idea that you wanted to start your own thing, or was that a struggle? Like, did you think you were going to go to another company like that? You're just going to, oh, I'm going to go to another company. But like, obviously you decided you start your own thing. I'm curious how you made that decision or thought through it.
I left Mindvalley. Well, a lot of the reason why I left Mindvalley at the time I did was because I was struggling with health issues. So even though it was a conscious decision to leave and I had this calling to kind of do my own thing, it was made easier because I was diagnosed as celiac and I couldn't eat gluten or wheat, and living in Asia, it became almost impossible for me to eat anything other than like white rice, where I would trust that I wasn't hurting myself or poisoning myself. And so the health thing was kind of a big thing. And I realized, like, you know, I think it might be time for me to move back to Canada. I also had missed my family. I was gone for almost 4 years, about like 3.5 years. And so there was all these things that were kind of coming together, which, you know, kind of told me it's time to leave. When it came to starting my own thing, I really didn't want to go work for another company, but I used that as like my fallback safety net in my head. Like, you know, I learned a lot of skills. I want to go. What's hilarious is back then, I don't even know if I called it freelancing. It was more just like, I'm just going to start taking on clients and working with clients kind of on the side, because I had learned all these marketing skills. And that's what I did. But I always had in the back of my head, like, worst case scenario, there's so many companies out there who need copywriters and marketers, and I'll get another job. Hopefully it can be a remote job. This was right around the time that like digital nomad, remote working was really kind of on the rise. And I thought that'd be the dream. And I never had to, you know, the freelancing thing worked out and I was able to do that. But yeah, I always knew that I didn't want to work for somebody else. Although one might say freelancing is just, you know, you trade in one boss for like eight.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah.
How'd you get your first client?
At a networking event. So This is what I tell my students all the time, because, you know, there's so many ways online you can get clients. And you know, I'm still old fashioned in the sense that, like, nothing is better than meeting people face to face, one on one, having conversations. I was at a marketing event in Phoenix, Arizona. I was newly out on my own, like, had a little bit of savings, but this would have been literally like my first month back in North America after leaving Malaysia. And I went to a marketing event and just started chatting with people. That was truly it. I think people try to overcomplicate it. Like, I had no sales pitch. I just started chatting with people, you know, made friends. And then when they inevitably ask you at any sort of business or marketing event what you do, I said, oh, well, I worked at this marketing company, but I just left. And now I'm just kind of looking for people I can support and in businesses that need support with copy. Or back then, I didn't even think I said copywriting. It was just marketing. You know, that's kind of really what my jam was building out marketing funnels. And that was it. It was like game over. I got my first client. They were my client for 10 years.
Wow.
It's like my first client was my last client. Wow. And then, of course, I had a lot of in between, but it was just having conversation.
How did you think about the structure? Like, because yours like one client, I'm sure you're just tickled to get one client and just, you know, just get some money in the door. But how did you start thinking about structuring the business going forward? Like, was it just going to be, I'm going to work with one client, do so many hours? Was it going to be project based? Like, I'm curious how that evolved over time.
It really is an evolution. Again, what I say to so many of my students, it's like, it's easy to kind of think of like what the dream freelancing scenario is, which is like, maybe you have 2 to 3 clients who pay you on retainer and you're working maybe 30 hours a week and you know, you're on a few meetings, but for the most part, you're just in creative flow, you're doing your thing. And I did get there in my business before I started the Copy Posse. But in the beginning, I mean, I didn't even think of myself as a business owner. In fact, this is like a super interesting conversation, but my team and I were talking the other day about like all the different words to describe being quote unquote self-employed. We're like, you know, there's freelancers, which I'm like, okay, those are like service-based entrepreneurs. But then I'm like, then you have entrepreneurs, and then you have business owners, and then you have founders. And like, what, like everyone kind of uses these words sort of.
Yeah.
Together, but like how I identified when I first started my business was like, I just need money. Yeah. So I didn't have a company. I didn't incorporate until 5 years later. Wow. So I'm talking like, I met a client, was like, you need some copyright or you need some marketing and copy. Excellent. Here's my personal bank account to send me money. I wasn't making enough that I could like, you know, like profit. What's that? Like, it was just like, oh my God, I made enough money to pay my bills this year. I remember my first year as a freelancer, I had to take out a loan to pay my tax bill, which wasn't a lot. It was like $7,000 or something. But I remember being like, what do you mean taxes? Like, it just, the whole world was just like, what? It wasn't until a little bit later that I started to get really strategic, more about, you know, what is my dream role? And I got really clear on, you know, I'm not going to be this like Jill of all trades. I used to kind of work with clients and they'd need like video editing. I'd be like, oh, I can kind of use iMovie. Okay, I'll do it. Like, I was just kind of throwing my hat in the ring for whatever. And then I got really clear, like, nope, I'm not technical. I don't do video editing. I shouldn't need to log in to any of your SaaS tools to do my job. I'm like a Google Doc, you know, that's what I do. I'm happy to be on, you know, 2 meetings a week. Unless we're in launch mode, and then I'm happy to be more available. And I just sort of started figuring out what felt good for me as a marketer and as a copywriter. And then that's only then can you get really clear, I think, on what the perfect business looks like for you. Because I have other students who love being more involved in the technical component. And that's because maybe they came from a background of like computer engineering. And they're like, well, I can mix that skill set with my writing skill set and actually become even more of an asset to my clients in this way. And that's the beauty of it. Like, I say copywriting is the gateway drug to entrepreneurship, because you learn the skill and then you're immediately starting to think like, how can I turn this into more? How can I expand my services? How can I serve clients in a way that's really unique to me? And then also get really clear on who's a yes and who's a no, and maybe grow a team. Do I hire junior writers and build an agency? Do I just stick with the one-on-one type of client relationships? Do I want to create my own brand and business down the road? It really becomes, you know, what you feel is the most exciting.
Do you think then it's a good place for folks to start is to almost kind of like you did, but like get some client, just do some work and start feeling out like, how does it feel to do this? And then instead of like, oh, I'm going to put a whole business plan and I'm going to say, this is what I'm going to do before you even get any clients and you don't even know if you're going to like it or not. What kind of direction would you take folks?
Honestly, I love that you said that. It's like, I always say like, get paid, then get picky. It's so easy. And by the way, I mean, this is just another form of imposter syndrome of feeling like you need to know all the things before you get started. And I can see this mentality a lot in my students where, you know, it's week one of my program of learning copywriting. And they're like, how do I incorporate? I'm like, whoa,
yeah, right.
Cool, Jeff, like one thing at a time. But I get it. Like, because you hear people talking about all the things that come with business ownership, like taxes and payroll and like all of these things. And honestly, it's knowing that you making the decision to go into entrepreneurship, whatever that looks like, all it starts with is you really getting paid to offer some sort of value to someone. I mean, a dog walker who gets paid, you know, $20 to go take a dog out for a walk, whatever, that's entrepreneurial. Like that's you making money outside the norm, outside the, I'm going to show up, punch in and punch out, get my paycheck every 2 weeks. And so really it comes down to like shifting your mindset to how can I add value and make money in a way that feels like this really beautiful exchange of products and services and energy for money, which is just another form of energy. Once you kind of adopt that mentality, all of the logistical stuff, honestly, that's the easy stuff to figure out. Yeah. Like that stuff comes because once you get a client, then worry about how you send an invoice. And yeah, trust me, if you need to send an invoice today, you will figure it out. Right. You'll go watch a YouTube video. Right. You will figure it out. Do not worry about sending an invoice before you have a client to send an invoice to.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole, the whole thing around getting started. That's where a lot of folks, I think, get hung up. I mean, I think for me for a while, I got hung up of like, let me overthink everything. Let me make sure every domino is in place before I start knocking them over. And actually it's kind of like the simple thing, even with like writing. Like if you're going to write a book, just start writing and put a practice in place. Right. You're going to edit it down the road. It's going to be shit at the beginning. Who cares? Just start doing it. It's actually the act of doing it is way better than having this grandiose idea, you know?
Well, and honestly, I used to be one of those people who overthought everything and had a plan and a list. And if it didn't go to plan, I was so upset. And I was like, oh my God, I messed up. Or now I realize like, it's really the say yes and figure it out later kind of mentality is you could get advice from 100 very successful entrepreneurs who will all have a different version of do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this. And you'll take copious notes and you'll be like, okay, whatever you do, don't do this. And whatever you do, do this. And guess what? You'll still probably do the things that they said not to do. And you'll still like, because we're all on our own journey. And I really do think the best way to learn is just to get into action and then get feedback, because what works for one person might not work for you. And I can tell when someone is being performative in their approach to building a business because they're just doing what someone else said to do. Like a perfect example is, you know, everyone always asks me, how do I get clients? And some of my students love cold outreach. Like they swear by it. They're like, I have a process. I send out hundreds of emails and this is how I built my business. I have other students who are like, I've never sent a cold email in my life. I'm more about like in-person networking, or I like to, you know, get my foot in the door first and then build my way up that way. And neither one is right or wrong. And so if you try to tell someone like there's only one path to climb a mountain and they're standing at the bottom of this mountain and they don't want to go that path, it can feel really defeating. And so I think it's realizing that you can play by your own rules and you shouldn't listen to what every single person on the internet tells you should do.
Yeah. Well, and if you haven't, that's the thing too. I'm trying to remember. I just had this conversation recently. I'm trying to remember who I had it with, but nonetheless, to your point, it's like, even your story or my story, there's so many little threads over the years that we probably don't even remember that have happened and has kind of propelled you and got to maybe where you want to go, or you've had a pivot. It's the same thing. Anyone starting today, it's like, just freaking start. figure it out. Sure, ask advice, but at the end of the day, you got to go with your gut, and then you make a change. You pivot. You, if it didn't work, you do something different. And like, stop overthinking the whole process, because I think at the end of the day, we can hamstring ourselves so much. I don't know. It's just, it's just crazy to me the amount of people that want to start, and but there's 50 excuses in the book. Like, they're ready to rabble off when you say, oh, you should try this. Oh, but I can't do that.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Do you hear that?
Yeah. And again, that's just keeping, that's just little, like little stories we tell ourselves that keep us safe. And so there's a reason for it, but yeah.
What are you What are you hearing from your students the most, or folks you work with, like right in today, different than maybe 3 or 4 years ago, of like struggles that they have? It could be around starting, just any, like, what are they bringing up the most that you're kind of like, wow, everyone's talking about this, this issue today. What is there anything specific?
Yeah, I think you probably have heard this a lot on your podcast, but, you know, I think a lot of people struggle with imposter syndrome. And there are times where I think, you know, it's a good thing that we're able to call it out and label it. But then I think there's this other kind of dark side to it where it's like, great, now we've given people another reason to another reason for them to label themselves as like, well, I have imposter syndrome, so I can't do that. You know, I think we all experience imposter syndrome, at least to some degree, when you realize that it's just an excuse that's stopping you from moving forward. And so a lot of my students will talk about that. And as soon as I realized that, you know, what I consider imposter syndrome is not that you feel like an imposter or a fraud, but it's all of these different ways that it shows up that reinforces the belief that you don't have enough information yet. You need to learn before you start, or it has to be perfect before you start. Or if you have to ask for help, it means you're a failure or a fraud. I mean, there's all of these mentalities that we adopt. And I think it's amplified by social media, because I think about when I first started freelancing, this was in 2011. I think Instagram was like just starting to pop. Like, it was just becoming a thing, but it was still sort of the era of, you know, you used it to connect with your friends. There wasn't, I think influencers were like just starting to become a thing. And then, you know, fast forward 8 years for when I started my YouTube channel, my mentality had changed so much, because when I started my business in 2011, I feel like I was a lot more confident than I was even 8 years later, which is ironic, right? I was more confident when I was just getting started because I had really no one to compare myself to, because social media wasn't a huge part of my life. To then fast forward, you know, I was an anonymous copywriter behind the scenes for 8 years, working with clients, ghostwriting. And then in 2019, I decided to start my YouTube channel. And it was like, oh my God, I was terrified. Yeah. I was so afraid of putting myself out there. And I was comparing myself to everybody else who had a YouTube channel talking about marketing and copywriting, and thought to myself, well, what in the hell? Like, what can I share that's different than what these people have already shared? And so the more we look for, again, for confirmation that we're not good enough or that we're not ready, the more we'll find it.
Yeah.
And so I almost had to like put the blinders on and just be like, what everyone else is doing doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't.
Do you still struggle with confidence today?
No, I think honestly, like building the copy posse, I shouldn't say I don't still struggle. I think I struggle in different ways. I think before it was more like people are going to think I'm an idiot, or people are going to think whatever. Now it's more like, can I continue to grow and serve my community in the best way? And it's less about not looking like an idiot, and it's more about truly showing up in contribution and service and wanting to help as much as I possibly can and not let anybody down. It's like a different kind of caring what other people think.
Interesting. Well, and I think also, I don't know, I'm kind of thinking this on the fly, but like when you, like you've obviously had some, we would probably consider successes, right, in the last 13, 14 years. It's like hitting game-winning shots. Like once you hit a few game-winning shots, you're not scared necessarily. You might be nervous, but you're willing to have the ball in your hand and do it. And I think that other folks like you, like I've talked with, that have had the ball in their hand and they don't get nervous and fearful anymore because it's like, I've done this before. This may not work out. This is totally different, but it feels similar to what I've done. Would you agree with that? Or, you know, give that as advice to other folks of like, that's where getting started and doing stuff allows you that or affords you that mentality.
Yeah. I think what I tell my students all the time is confidence only comes after courage. Mm. And so this sense of I'm not confident and then somehow thinking that everybody else who's just getting started is confident or has confidence, and thinking, well, I'm not confident, so I shouldn't do it, or it means that I'm not ready. I think to me, I really noticed my confidence grow after having a bit of courage to put myself out there. You know, you have a bit of courage to do the thing that you've wanted to do. Then you get feedback. And sometimes all it takes is like one stranger on the internet to be like, thank you. This is what I needed to hear today. And you're like, oh my God. Okay. I've helped someone, you know? And then you're like, that's just going to give me a little bit more courage to just do it again and do it again, and do it again until you realize like, wow, I didn't realize that I was stopping myself because I didn't have confidence in what I was doing. But I always just tell myself like, nobody, like, you're not born with the confidence, you know, to do everything in the world. You when you're a baby, you're like, I'm just gonna learn. And babies have so much courage. Like young kids, I like look at them, I'm like, God, if only I had that courage that they have, because they're just like, they're just being themselves and going after it. And I think that the older we get, the more we get kind of, I don't know, we judge ourselves and we expect to have to be perfect, and we compare ourselves to someone who's 10 steps further down the road.
Yeah. Definitely got to have that short memory. That's helpful. If you could have a short memory like a baby.
You need to have a short memory like a baby.
I got to ask you here, and we'll kind of wrap up the conversation today, but how did you come up with, I love your mission to de-douchify the internet. How did you come up with this?
Yeah. All right. So this actually ties really good into our conversation because again, right, I didn't think of that before I started the Copy Posse. I really like got clear with what I really wanted. So I had been a freelance copywriter for eight, nine years, and was feeling kind of jaded by the whole industry because for almost a decade I was working behind the scenes. You know, all my clients that I wrote for, I really loved and admired. But you know, you get to see a lot of what's not cool going on the internet when you're a copywriter. And I just kind of felt jaded, and I honestly was. It had been so long that I'd been doing freelance copywriting that I'm like, okay, I think I have a lot to share on what I think is the future of marketing. So really strongly that I think there's a different way to go about marketing. So let me start talking about it without using words like de-douchify the internet.
Right.
And then one time I was on a call with my students, and it just fell out of my mouth. I was like, you know, I started the Copy Posse because I really just thought there was a better way to do marketing. And I was just getting so sick and jaded of all the bullshit I was seeing out there. And I said, I just wanted to de-douchify the internet. And it came out of my mouth. And my students were like, oh my God, that is the most amazing thing I've ever heard. And so it was like, my mission was crystallized, but only through me actually fully embodying it and living it and then crystallizing it. And so going back to this whole, like, doesn't have to be perfect before you start. I knew what the essence of my mission was, but it was only like maybe a year after I started the Copy Posse as a brand that those words really were like, oh yes, that is what embodies. That is what is like, that's the embodiment of what I'm trying to say. And so it was really organic. I didn't have it, you know, mapped out in a brand plan before starting my business.
Isn't it weird though? Like that was probably in your head or somewhere around that. And just finally, almost like letting it out and just being yourself and saying like, screw this. Exactly. This is who I am anyways. All of a sudden that's what takes form, you know?
Exactly. And that's so it. I was on a podcast last week actually talking about this is like that integration bit of like, who are you really versus who are you trying to be? And I think like anyone, when I first was starting my public brand. I was trying so hard to be like all the other professional YouTubers that I was following. And even though I was myself, I felt like I was editing a lot and I was holding back. And it wasn't until I got more confident because I was doing it and getting feedback and my confidence started to grow that all of a sudden the who I really am and like how I was maybe trying to portray myself all of a sudden just merged into one. And it was such a relief to be like, guess what? I swear, deal with it. If you don't like it, unsubscribe from my email list. You know, yeah. Like I've offended people with my de-douchify the internet. Like people email me being like, oh, and I'm like, if you're offended, maybe you're the problem. Like it's, let's look at this. But it's been really freeing. But again, it took doing the thing to then feel the confidence to then fully own it. It wasn't a, I'm going to fully own it from the get-go and feel like 100% confident. It's been an evolution for sure.
Well, and not everyone's going to like you, right? So it's like, why would you appease people that don't like you? Let's just be myself and then attract the people that do want to follow along. You know, I think that's a great way to do it. And obviously you've had a lot of success on YouTube looking at your subscriber count and what is like 400 plus 500 videos, something like that. So you've obviously figured out a way to make it work. So.
Thank you. Yeah. And I think, you know, getting over the not everyone's going to like you thing. It's funny how many times, you know, I would say, like when people say like, I just don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. Like I realized that like, actually I really do give a fuck and probably cared a little bit too much about, not about what people thought, but just, I just really care about people. And I think that, you know, as a recovering perfectionist, I wanted to show up in this way for them. And in the growth of my business, the biggest thing that I've learned is that people actually respond way more to the imperfect moments and the times when I'm just being a little bit raw and just sharing the journey. And so I think if anyone listening to this is fearful of getting started because they're not going to do it right, like you won't do it right. You're going to mess up sometimes and that's okay. Like I look back at all the times I messed up and I'm like, man, that was such an amazing lesson that I can now share with people. Like, it's so boring when everything goes right all the time.
Yeah, that's a fair point. We're not going to have time to get into the recovering perfectionist, but my gosh, if you come back on for a number two episode, I'd love to talk about that next time.
I could talk all day about perfectionism. I call it perfastination because I feel like I procrastinate until it's perfect. And that's just a whole other thing. So, yeah.
Well, so let's end on this. I always like to ask, you know, anything. So we've talked a lot about getting started, which I'm happy about. Anything you would share, it could be a question of the audience, could be a challenge, maybe something you would encourage them to do. Maybe it's just a piece of advice to leave on. Anything else to kind of wrap up our conversation that you'd kind of leave behind?
Yeah. I guess the question I would ask you, and I learned this from one of my coaches, is we tend to think about what could happen if we take a risk, right? So we're like, well, if I take this risk, what could happen? And we immediately go to like, well, I could lose my predictable income. I could lose security. And like, those are all valid. But my question to you is, what would happen if you didn't take the risk? What would happen if you didn't put yourself out there and start the thing? What would happen if you didn't get started? Because I know for me, the fear of fast forwarding 10 years and not have ever done anything to move in the direction of my dreams feels like death to me. And that's scary, scarier than being uncomfortable for maybe a shorter period of time. And so the question I would leave everyone with is, it's easy to think about what could go wrong, but what could go right? And then also what would happen if you decide not to do anything? Where would you be?
I love that. I think that's a great question for people to noodle on today and think about, because you're right. I mean, we always think about the bad stuff. God, what if it went right? How cool would that be? You know, sometimes you got to lean into that.
So that's awesome. What if the bad stuff like staying the same for the next 10, 20 years. Like,
yuck, to me, who wants like, to do that?
Doesn't that sound terrible? Do not be listening to this just getting started podcast in 10 years. In 10 years, you should be fully not getting started, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely right. I love that. This has been a lot of fun. Where can folks say hello to you online? Where do you spend the most time?
Yeah, honestly, I'm always on Instagram, Copy Posse, CopyPosse, or copyposse.com.
Awesome. What do you, and you got a new program launching, right?
I do. So if, yeah, if anyone's interested in learning more about that, I am launching a membership in April.
Awesome.
It's going to be a new membership for brand new freelancers and copywriters who are 100% in that zone of, oh my gosh, I have learned some copywriting skills and now I want to get clients. What do I do now? So it's very much everything you need to get, you know, sort of to that zero to 10K a month mark. And we haven't launched that yet, but if you go to copyposse.com and get on my email list, you will definitely hear about it.
Awesome. And I'll link all that up in the show notes. Alex, thank you so much for joining. This was a lot of fun. I appreciate being on.
Yeah, thank you. I had so much fun.
Hey everyone. And just one more quick thing before you head off on your day. If you're enjoying this podcast and are looking for other resources and tools to help you get started and move forward toward a happier and more fulfilling life, then I'd encourage you to head over to my website, brianandraco.com, and hit the subscribe button in the upper right corner. There you can find my newsletter and blog subscriptions, where I share insights and information around getting unstuck, perspective, mindset, relationships, habits, and much more. If you get a chance to sign up, I hope you enjoy. Thanks again for listening in. And have a phenomenal day.